Black Tech Green Money isn't just about telling the stories of successful black entrepreneurs. It's also about giving actionable and wealth-building strategies that help you protect the future of our communities. That's why we're pleased to be supported by State Farm Insurance. State Farm also believes that we must invest in our communities to achieve economic growth by sponsoring programs like the AXO, which rewards high school students for their academic achievements. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Hey, everyone. It's our favorite time of the year here at The Black Effect. We're heading to Atlanta for the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival, and we're not going alone. Nissan is back as our partner, and they're continuing their Pitch Your Podcast Lounge at the festival, where you'll have the opportunity to pitch your podcast idea live and share it with the Black Effect team. So get those podcast ideas ready. And remember, you can count on Nissan to dial up the thrill in your adventures, no matter where life takes you. Visit blackeffect.com/podcastfestival for more details.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk? Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar 20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, "The bigger the ROAS, the better," over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T. I'm Will Lucas, and this is Black Tech Green Money. Afrotech 2022, Austin, Texas. Blavity Org's Tammy Gordon is on the main stage talking Revisiting the Talented 10th, a concept of creating leadership in black communities via education and missionaries of culture and expansion of thought. That's a simplification, but you can do your homework on W.E.B. Du Bois and his work. She's talking with Torian Robinson, who's biz dev at Alchemy Health, and Bridget Jones, the Hood Historian, a Tennessee-based historian focusing on race relations and the lasting legacy of U.S. slavery.
We're excited to be here. Tori and Bridget, I'm so happy to have you guys.
I'm excited too.
Happy to be here.
We've been talking about this, planning for this. I want y'all to know we're friends, okay? This is like, I love these people. And so we're going to have a conversation. We're going to invite you into the conversations that we generally have, but we're here today to talk about reclaiming your renaissance. And Beyonce's put that back on the map. So if anyone's heard the new Beyonce album, it's got a lot to do with the renaissance. But there are some real origins to the Talented 10th and the renaissance. And so we want to have that conversation with you all. But before we get started, we're a lot more than our titles, a lot more than what folks may see on the screen. And I think I'm in charge of advancing, so I'm going to do some of that. And if it works, it works. And if it doesn't, I'm telling you right now, we're not going to use them. But Bridget, Torian, you guys tell us who you are, what you do, and how who you are shows up in what you do.
Well, I am a historian by trade. I am the director of equitable partnerships for Bellmead Historic Site and Winery, which is, drum roll, a former plantation. So I am a Black woman that works on a plantation. Now, who ever thought?
We don't talk about it.
I ain't listen. But I've been able to transition that into consulting for diversity, equity, and inclusion, and kind of looking at how slavery is the reason that we have so many issues still prevalent today. So I founded Bridge Builders Historical Consulting in 2020, and that has opened numerous doors for me, being able to talk about history in a way that many people don't get to. When people tend to think historian, they tend to think like, oh, PhD, I'm hood. So my brand of historian is very different. And I mean, I'm native to Memphis. I went to Tennessee State, if you can't tell. So I'm very proud of being able to take up space and be authentic to who I am. So yeah, I'm happy. I'm blessed to be here.
Hey, again, Torian, you said outside of the titles, I am a husband.
Yep.
Of 12 years. I am a father of 4, 7, 5, 3, 1. So a crazy household. And like they said, I'm a multi, industry seasoned leader. So I've been across a number of spaces, starting my career in finance and retail banking to community banking, to youth development, to higher ed, to entertainment. And now, working at Alchemy, which is a brand dedicated to curating content for the culture around health and wellness. And so, and I actually was found out about that organization when I was at my previous employer in entertainment and realized how much we needed healing amongst the community. I was looking for a resource for artists and staff and found out about the dope things that was happening at Alchemy. And so, I wanted to give that context about the spaces that I've been, who I am, because it's also helped shape, my narrative, my POV for this discussion. So when we talk about Talented 10th, it's like, over the years, all of these spaces have formed me. Oh, I failed to mention, I'm from Chicago, from the crib. For those that know, they're familiar, but from Chicago, spent 13 years in Harlem, uptown New York, and then relocated 4 years ago to Atlanta. And so again, when you talk about the spaces that I've been, the industries that I've been, I feel like, I could lend a certain perspective to this discussion.
Thank you, guys. It's so important. We got to bring our whole selves to this space. And we're not going to preview the homework, but I'm going to give you a piece of insight to where we're going. Y'all got to bring your whole selves to this experience. There's a lot of ourselves that we don't share and get hidden when we lead with, I'm a engineer, I'm a director, I'm a whatever. Like, let's share all of who we are. Because there's so much about being able to do that, especially in spaces like this, where there's so many of us and able to see our reflections in one another. So thank y'all for setting the stage in that way. All right, I'm gonna walk y'all through really quick because there's a lot of intention in this conversation. Bridget and Torian are gonna share a lot of insight, but I want you guys to just follow along and know where we're going. We're talking about the Renaissance. We're gonna be talking about some topics that are tough, that are typically triggering, but they're real and they're ours. And so we're going to talk about that. So we're going to talk about the Black Renaissance. We're going to talk about the origins of that. We're going to talk a lot about slavery and be real about where some of our stuff comes from. And then we want you guys to walk away with something. There's homework, there's lessons. Like, we want to be really intentional that you guys leave this conversation with something. And then also a new connection with one another. So just inviting y'all to know how we're going to explore the next 50 so or minutes together. But kicking us off, Bridget, the historian on our panel, can you tell us, what's the Talented 10th? What's the Renaissance?
So the Talented 10th as a theory was essentially created by a white man who was the founder of Morehouse. And W.E.B. Du Bois picked up on that and essentially just agreed with it. And it's a theory that believes that 10% of Black people will carry the rest of the race of Black people. So only 10% of us has the acumen to be successful.
Not the 25,000 that are here right now.
No.
No.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Where'd it come from?
It came from ideas of exceptionalism. And we've all seen ideas of exceptionalism in present day. But historically speaking, the exceptional people were usually the people who were either skilled laborers during enslavement or they were biracial. So that means that you were a blacksmith or a tradesman. You had something that could translate into a paying job, a well-paying job post-emancipation. Or you were biracial and had close ties with the white community. So you were deemed an exceptional Negro. And they translated that later on into something they deemed the talented 10th. And these 10% of people are exceptional to all other Black people. And they're going to have to carry the rest of Black people because they just, them po' babies ain't going to be able to make it.
Nope. Torian, you went to Morehouse.
Okay. Yep.
Yep. We just, I don't know if y'all know or heard what Bridget said, but it's named after a white man, even though it is the house, right? How did this show up at Morehouse?
I mean, it showed up in new student orientation. I started school in 2000, so I'm also recognizing like times have changed over the last 20 years. You know, we've had advancements, you know, or, you know, when you think President Obama and things like that, that again, new generations may have different philosophies. But yeah, when I started at Morehouse, I mean, and a number of folks may have heard this at Morehouse or across other HBCUs or spaces. You know, the first thing that was told to us at NSO was like, look to your left, look to your right. That person's probably not going to be here. Mm-hmm. And at that time, it was more of a adoption, or how I interpreted it was, you know, this is a weeding out process. This is the best of the best that's going to make it. And unfortunately, half my class that started with me did not graduate. So again, I took that as a badge of honor. But it's one of those things that I think, depending how you internalize that, you know, or the language that may be used, you know, confidently, I was thinking I was going to be the baddest man walking on 2 feet and coming to save our people. You can go back to Chicago, or we dissipate to, you know, wherever spaces we want to go to in the world professionally, and we're going to help save the race. But again, it's like, that's how it was, the seeds were planted. I don't think that was necessarily the intention. Mm-hmm. And like I said, because I have gone on to, other spaces and industries, one of the things I did note, I did come back to Morehouse, you know, close to 15 years later as a fundraiser. And so I was as a fundraiser at that time, you know, a lot of that language has changed. And so, you know, where it was no longer, you know, look to your left, look to your right. It's like, hey, once you're here, we need to make sure we see you through. And so I've seen a lot of shift in that. But yes, it started there. And then, you know, I became I'm a Kappa man. And so, again, it's like, go through that process and things like that. Like, it adds to this notion that, you know, you're part of this talented 10th. We're going to go off. We're going to save our people. But again, that could shift, or has shifted over times for me.
Yep. And we're going to come back to this notion of saving our people, because that's a through line through the Renaissance, through talented 10th, and even the evolutions of different phases of Renaissance. Bridger, you also went to HBCU, TSU. How'd this show up in your world?
Well, I was told the exact same thing that Torian was at orientation, the look to your left, look to your right thing. So, and it was accurate. The person who was to my right did not graduate with me. The person to my left did. And also it showed up in spaces like trying to pledge. Man, that was the hardest process of essentially kind of classism and trying to be exceptional enough to make the line. Like, that was that was a thing, you know. And if you went to an HBCU, pledging at an HBCU that's like cream of the crop. When you meet people that went to HBCUs, the first question they ask is, did you pledge? And if you didn't, why didn't you? So it definitely showed up there. I think historically we see it in the majorette lines. I know colorism has been historically really big with majoretting at HBCUs, and in some HBCU instances, even admission. I won't say it's a fact, but there's a probable rumor concerning Fisk and historically administering the brown paper bag test for admission into Fisk University. So if you're not this light or above this shade, you can't even come here. So I think it shows up in numerous ways throughout HBCU culture.
How many folks in the audience went to an HBCU? Show of hands. Hey. Any D9 folks in the crowd? Oh, I see y'all. My great grandmother used to do the paper bag test before we would go to church. And I remember her being like, y'all gotta wear stockings. Put on those white stockings because y'all are not light enough to be showing your legs out in church. And so it's really interesting how these notions that we may read about, and I don't know how many of you guys heard about the Talented 10th before, like before today, before Beyonce started talking about it on her album. There's a few hands. These are things that are imprinted on us, right? And they came from somewhere, right? There's origins from somewhere. We'll talk a little bit about where those origins are and where they show up. But I've listened to a lot of the panels at Afrotech the past couple of days. We got folks who are looking for jobs. We got folks who are trying to like figure out where my stuff comes up, where it shows up. Do I turn that off? Can I be free because I'm with 25,000 other Black people, but I'm also interviewing and trying to make connections and get that funding? How has this followed you, right? So y'all experienced it firsthand at an HBCU. Some of us in D9 space, being in step clubs, majorette. As you shifted into your professional world, right, this role or other ones, like, how are y'all navigating some of the stuff that's been imprinted on you from both your collegiate experience, but like in cases of great grandma, like it's likely embedded in our families too. How do y'all navigate that?
I think code switching was my hardest lesson. Learning how to enter a space and straddle that line between authenticity and professionalism. That was really, really difficult for me because I believe in being completely myself at all times. But that is not always the best method towards getting to your bag, because a lot of times other people are not aware of how your authenticity is a part of you. Because you're expected to assimilate, you're expected to come into spaces and take up space in a way that makes other people comfortable. Mm. And when you step outside of that box, you become a problem. And I think I've been seeing on LinkedIn this idea of like the quiet firing. You don't want to be quietly fired because you're trying to be yourself at work. I've had numerous instances of like being at work, and again, I work on a historic plantation, so there's levels of microaggressions that I've had to deal with when talking about slavery with 25 white people, even down to, oh, you're so well-spoken. Mm. Child, was I not supposed to be?
What does well-spoken mean?
What, you thought I was going to come in here gang? No, baby, I'm at work.
And if you did, you're still a historian. You still got more facts than most people.
Right. But they will discredit your facts solely because of how you look and how you present yourself. I could have all the degrees and accolades and certifications in the world, but at the end of the day, when I step into their room, I'm a 5'9" Black girl with blue hair. And they don't feel like these things can coexist together.
Taryn, I want you to answer. I also want to hear your thoughts on this professionalism and authenticity, because they seem to be separate, but are they? And in your experience, what does that look like? Wherever you want to start.
No, I guess to continue, like as I left Morehouse, I mean, it doesn't matter if you go to HBCU, PWI, you know, Black folks, we treat each other as a community. So if you move to a certain city like New York, you know, and everyone knows, it's like, well, who has been? It's like you find your people, you know, whether you're in banking, creatives, nonprofits, whatever. You know, a lot of times we end up coming together, all of us. And so what I started to see over time was, I mean, we, you know, you're brunching it up and, you know, we engage in discussions. So, I mean, some of these notions around talented tents or how you approach the world, you know, are going to be not necessarily dispelled, but they can evolve. Mm-hmm. And so in my case, you know, I started my career in finance. I was working for HSBC Bank. And at the time, I opened our first branch in Harlem. And so when I did that, it was the beginning of the recession. So, pretty much set myself up for failure. And I remember them asking me one time, and I guess that was a microaggression. They asked me, hey, do you want to go back downtown? As a way to kind of ask me, like, hey, your career's in jeopardy because you're not hitting these numbers. And they had a cookie cutter model where it's like, it didn't matter if you open on 112th or Wall Street. And so I was like, no, I want to stay around here. And that became my beginning of kind of being authentically me. I lived in Harlem, I worked in Harlem, so I wanted to be within the community. And I got to see the community different. So that was, and so kind of connecting it to, again, to our peers and dispelling notions or evolving. People, my group just kind of saw how I would move. And so it's like, hey, you sacrificed and you worked, you know, worked for a bank in Harlem. And then I went into nonprofit work, which ultimately I ended up working at a nonprofit, the Harlem Children's Zone in Harlem. And that space there, and I'll tie it into the professionalism, working in the community, being around the youth and younger folks, I think dispels or pushes a lot of those boundaries or things that we may hold on to. So when we talk professionalism, I remember at the time, we're at a tech conference, you know, your biggest, you know, icons, not black, but just in the tech space around that time, you know, you have your Mark Zuckerbergs, you had Steve Jobs wearing black, but Mark wearing a hoodie. And so it's kind of hard to tell, you know, and we have some of these traditional talent to temp notions around professionalism, which ultimately I believe were rooted in, again, you know, benchmarking against those that weren't from our culture, you know, mainly white folks. And so if you're telling youth they have to dress a certain way, and then at the same time saying the tech industry was the pathway of the future, and they're looking at examples, like it was hard. It was an inauthentic balance. Yep. To be able to talk to them that way. So it started formulating for me or pushing that notion. Like, what are we talking about? And I saw it show back up when I went back to Morehouse because it was to fundraise where, you know, you have some folks and recruiters still in the finance space asking like, oh, you need to change, you know, shave or change it. It's like all of this, you know, I think as a community or as a culture, we should have like start to have a thought or think about where some of these appearances, guidelines, professionalism, what are we really talking about? Mm-hmm. Because like I said, as I went from Harlem Children's Zone, which part of the way we also bonded or got towards community and built community with the youth was also being able to relate to them. And so you have someone that looks like you that speaks, you know, in a culturally relevant way, that's really, you know, inspiring them because you know how to kick that lick with them. You know how to talk that stuff.
Yep.
You're interested in some of the same things. And so when I started to see examples, you know, from there, you know, to entertainment, you know, it's just like, look, if we're talking about the future, a lot of those examples, you know, it's like, what are we really holding on to? And I realized it's like, maybe those are rooted in things that aren't necessarily necessary for success. Because by the time I got to entertainment, you know, I was working at J. Cole's Dreamville in Dreamville, where it's like, you know, you have generationally, arguably our great generation's greatest artists that may not epitomize what W.E.B. Du Bois was talking about when he was talking about talent today. But he and a number of our artists were going to relate more to the future than some of the things and notions that we were trying to, you know, dispel to them.
Yeah.
Seeing our communities grow and thrive is something we care deeply about here at Black Tech Green Money. State Farm Insurance also cares about the growth of Black communities. They're actively investing in programs and initiatives that help provide financial literacy, give early career advice, and grow Black-owned businesses, thus leading to generational wealth, which helps protect the future of our communities. We want to build a future that we all can be proud of. State Farm understands that representation alone doesn't equate to authenticity. It also requires active sponsorship of programs like the AXO, a year-long program that recognizes and rewards high school students for their academic and cultural achievements, along with funding programs like Project Ready, a national Urban League program committed to educational achievement of Black and brown youth that has awarded over $11 million in scholarship offers to date. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities and can have a long-lasting impact. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Hey everyone, I am so excited. The Black Effect is live. This April 27th, the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival is headed to Atlanta's very own Pullman Yards. Last year was incredible, and this year will be even more thrilling, especially with Nissan coming back along for the ride. Nissan is returning with some empowering activations to support Black excellence in the STEAM fields. Have a podcast idea you've been eager to share with the culture? Well, Nissan is back with a Pitch Your Podcast Lounge. You'll have the chance to record your podcast idea and have it shared with a Black Effect Podcast Network team. But that's not all. Nissan is taking the stage to spotlight some of the HBCU scholars from their own Thrill of Possibility Summit, Nissan's action-packed weekend of community building, mentorship, and professional development for HBCU scholars pursuing professions in STEAM. The Black Effect Podcast Festival is the event to be at. You won't want to miss this, because no matter where life takes you, Nissan will dial up the thrill of your adventures. Visit blackeffect.com/podcast festival for more details.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic. And at higher risk, get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
Opportunity is not equally distributed. To every Black entrepreneur listening, I want to make sure you have the tools and resources you need to grab your next opportunity. That's why I'm telling you about the 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative. The 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative is an award-winning program created by Shopify and Operation Hope. They're on a mission to start, grow, and scale 1 million Black businesses by 2030, driving wealth creation for the Black community. Out of 6 million employer-owned businesses in the U.S., only 2.3% have Black ownership. This program gives Black entrepreneurs tools and resources to level the playing field, from free business coaching to tailored training and extended free Shopify trial. Shopify's made a 10-year, multi-million dollar commitment to the program, and it's working. The initiative already started, supported, and engaged with over 334,000 Black businesses, helping them operate businesses that sell anything from skateboards to coffee beans to apparel. Business owners love this program. Simone Harvin, founder of SC Creative Group, says, "The 1 million Black businesses experience for me was unlike any other program I've been a part of, primarily because it was for us and it was by us. Here at Drink Champs, we are always interacting with our listeners, many being Black entrepreneurs. Shopify is one of those platforms that empowers and emboldens entrepreneurship. So chart your own path for business success with the 1 million Black Businesses Initiative and Shopify. Bring your business to Shopify with an exclusive 120-day free trial at shopify.com/BEN, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/BEN.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, "The bigger the ROAS, the better," over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
I'm going to come back to how we're able to navigate that, right? Because we've got a little bit of time and experience on our side, right? We've been able to navigate professional settings. We have expertise in certain areas. And so there's an air of privilege that allows authenticity to show up for us, right? And for folks who have a bit more experience than it would for someone who's out here looking for a job or trying to make a career pivot or change industries. I want to get really specific about some of our stuff because you guys brought it up, right? There's some things about our hair, about our skin color, about the way we talk, about where we come from, what part of town we're in. We didn't make those up, right? And part of, I'm on the Blavity.org side, so I get to run the Blavity.org Foundation, which is a nonprofit side to Afrotech, Blavity Inc., and all the things that you guys know Blavity.com to be. We talk a lot about what our assignment is, right? And part of my assignment here is to ensure that we're shifting our relationship to stuff that was never ours to begin with and reclaim, right? So like reclaiming this renaissance, reclaiming notions of power that are ours, right? We inherited a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
It's been imprinted on our DNA. It shows up in how we were raised. It shows up in the schools we go to. It shows up in how we interview and think about professionalism and jobs, right? Let's get real specific about what those things are, where they came from, and then what we got to give back, right? Let's give that back to wherever it came from, right? Somehow we've taken on the notion of slavery as if we were slaves, right? That's our origin. Give that back to the enslavers. We didn't do that, right? There's a whole lot to us that has come about. Like, Black folks should be extinct. We shouldn't be here. And there's so much about our power and about what we've navigated and how we've navigated that should force us to pause and look at that source of the information, like that source of our power, and let go of the other thing. So I want to get specific because y'all talked about it. We bridged it. We're going to see where the slides are in here. Ignore this if it is not relevant to what we're talking about. But we're going to talk about it. Hair, dress, all these things came up. Where do you guys want to start? What thing you want to start with, Taurine, and then Bridget, where did it come from?
Do you want to, I was going to say, you want to start with degree in education? We had a tech conference.
Yeah, let's go with it. All right. Degree in education, as far as the weight that we put on it today, has, first of all, it's always been a thing. Education has always been something that was for the more wealthy. Education was a class system even before, back in Greek society, historically, only the wealthy was able to get an education. Everybody else was a pauper or something like that. But as it relates to current society, the educated Black people historically were, again, either free Black people who had access to education because they were free, because in many Southern states, it was illegal for you to learn how to read and write. Or in post-emancipation, it was people who had wealthy white benefactors who could afford to educate you. So somebody had to foot the bill for their education until public schools become a thing. And essentially, education has always been a class thing. So as we begin to establish HBCUs right after emancipation, these schools are places and spaces where Black people who had no education could come and get the early rudiments of it. So reading, writing, and arithmetic, they used to call it the three R's. And then they evolved into the universities that we see today. So at one point, historically, Black colleges was all we had. That was the only place we could go get an education. And today, you know, I think to see this resurgence of popularity for HBCUs is really positive, because I think it's great to see Black people champion HBCUs in a way that I don't think we've seen probably the last 20 to 30 years.
Yeah. I'm going to interject real quick, Taurine. We went on, when we got here on Friday, we went on a tour with Black Austin Tours. His name, Javier Wallace, runs these tours. He founded it in 2019, and he takes you around downtown Austin to let you reconnect with like the origins of Blackness that are in the city. He talked a lot about education, and there was a group of students that we were on this tour with, and they were just like, well, how are they going to go to college if they couldn't read, if they couldn't write, if they, like, weren't they ignorant? Like, they couldn't access this even if it was offered to them. And one of the things he said that stuck out to me was like, don't confuse ignorance and access, right? Our people were listening, The grapevine, right? And I think you said James Baldwin, so you hold me accountable. James Baldwin coined the term the grapevine, and information would get to and from and through Black people. We would find ways to educate ourselves, even if we didn't have access to the means to write or read, we would still know. And so even as you talk about this, like we can't confuse the notion of our aspirations and wanting to do more and wanting to get education with the idea that it wasn't accessible to us. Those are two very different things.
Yeah, I think, and even looking at what we deem to be quality education, if you look at the argument between W.E.B. Du Bois and Booker T. Washington being very much so technologically focused and feeling like, and not to say that his views were not in some ways problematic, but feeling like Black people should focus specifically on agriculture and technological advancements of that time period. And W.E.B. Du Bois is saying, we didn't till enough fields. We need to go get an education and run for political office. These were two very opposing views, but very necessary, because if the world collapses today, me and my degree, we can't grow nothing.
Hmm. I would say also, when we look at this and we're talking about dispelling, you know, the talented 10th, or reimagining it, or how is it showing up amongst us? I mean, you know, I'm not saying in the public sphere, but amongst our community chats or our friends and things like that, you know, I know there's big discussions around the value of education. Of course, you know, HBCUs are being pushed, but I mean, college in general. Mm-hmm. And we're coming to a point where, you know, all of that is being disrupted. The whole country is looking into it. The world is looking at us. You know, like I said, in the spaces that I've been, I've seen it being reimagined. And when I was also last at Morehouse, when we were talking about new pathways, we're at a tech conference. And so a lot of what you saw, again, if you have a student saying, looking at, you know, some of these founders and see, well, they never finished their degree. Some of the stuff for us where it's like we're quantifying or putting value on each other, like whether or not you finished or you got this degree, mm-hmm. versus maybe the education side of it is like what type of skills or what type of advancement. I mean, Jay-Z does have a degree, but it's like, would any of us not go to a master class he's going to have on anything?
I mean, we got lit.
Like, you know what I mean? So it's one of those things where I think for us, you know, it's not a right or wrong. It's just a reimagining where, you know, when we talk about, you know, us as a people at the table, it's going to be some folks that have, you know, degrees. They're going to have some with MBAs and certifications. Some are going to have, you know, certifications with boot camps, and or someone's going to live life and have experience because they've been, you know, entrepreneur for a number of years. And so, and we can't discount that, because I would throw that in the education platform because it's experience. Yep. And so it's just one of those things that, you know, how we're looking at it is all I'm encouraging us to do. Mm-hmm. Just like look at it more inclusive, where it's going to be a little bit of that, this and that, to ultimately, you know, get us to where we need to get to.
Yep. Let's go to hair, right? You brought it up.
Bridget. Is that hair?
Hey, let's go to hair. I know you got some under there. But let's even the clean cut, right? You talked about blue. You talked about your hair being blue. We have a lot of conversations at home about my sister and I both have little boys who have big natural curly hair, and our parents and great aunts are like, don't you want to etch that up? Shouldn't he put on a wave cap? Like, he needs to look a certain way. Like, that's undone. It's unkept. It's not right. Are you incapable of doing your job with blue hair, Bridget? Does your beard prevent you, Torian, from being able to go out and advocate for mental health, for Black men, for supporting students? Like, let's talk a little bit about what our appearance does and how, where'd that come from?
So in regards to hair, hair has always been something that goes across the diaspora. So Black people over across the ocean in Africa have always been able to do some amazing things with their hair. And it symbolized tribe and region. They still, in many cultures, do this today. But when we got over here, is when individuality and that capacity started to become a problem. And I think the first time that you really see this in history is about 1756, 57, down in Louisiana, specific to New Orleans, when they created what was called the Tignon Law. And the Tignon Law was created because white women felt like...
glad with that.
I'm trying to say this in a very...
Nope, you just need to say it, Bridget. Like, just say it.
We amongst us.
White women felt like our hair was a distraction to their men. So they went to the person who was basically like the governor at the time, because this is during a period before Louisiana was part of the United States officially. And basically said, you got to do something about these free mulatto women specifically and these enslaved women, they hair. My husband, he looking. I can't. Nope. You got to do something about it. And so he passed a law called the Ting Yong Law, and women had to wrap their hair. And it stopped Black women being able to distinguish themselves from free and enslaved in a lot of cases. And it made all of us just look enslaved. But the gag is, though, they took them Ting Yongs and they wrapped them just so fly.
We fly.
And before you know it, a Ting Yong was considered haute couture by French royals. And you can go find wealthy white French women wearing a Ting Yong because they thought it looked dope. But Black women were legally obligated to wear those wraps.
Appropriation. Just going to put that in the box right there. How's that show up for the men, Torian?
I mean, for the men, and it's interesting. And I guess it becomes it's a decision, and it becomes a question of the spaces and places that you're at. And so when I think of your traditional business, banking, you know, those folks like clean cut, not loud, and understanding the rule of thumb was you're doing this because you want your appearance not to distract from the business at hand. That's how it was taught to me. that's how I showed up. But over time, and I've seen this push amongst a younger generation where it's like, why do I need to do that? Why do I want to maintain my dreads? I want to maintain my beard. And the thing I would tell them at the time is just like, well, think about where you're going. So if you're going in this majority white space and this is what is expected, this may prevent you from getting an opportunity, you know, and just know it's not fair. Life ain't fair. So I'm not saying it's right or wrong. It's just not fair. But that's a decision you're making. But if you want to play that game, that's a decision you're making. So that's how I may show up in that. But again, moving on into more creative entertainment. Technically, I've been working in Black spaces since 2011. So it's been freeing, you know, across various industries because even, you know, yeah, I started growing my beard out, especially when, you know, I think I started losing my head. I never found a hair. I never really found out. I just cut it all off. But you know, you start to show up in different ways and get creative with that. And you see a lot of Black men do that, where it's between their hair and, you know, with their beards. And so I've seen it become a lot more free. I think the kept thing is still, I don't know if culturally we'll never let that go, because it's like, hey, look, at the end of the day, you know, you could say you're being on, you know, natural, but if it's like you haven't edged it up or something, you know what I mean? Like, it's still, you know, we've seen, you know, Steph Curry and them, and everyone has questions. Like, like right. You know, you're not going to get a lineup. But it's just one of those things. I don't think culturally we may get rid of that, but I think there's still a way to present it authentically. But, you know, yeah.
Yeah. What I love about spaces like this, about Afrotech, I walked into Expo Hall yesterday, and I mean, we are everywhere, and our hair and our colors, like gorgeous, just everybody's looking good. We're out here being ourselves. And even if this space is not necessarily representative of what you have to go back home to, right? So your office space, your job space, your community space, we know right now this is not representative of Austin, right? Austin is 6-5% Black, right? I think we done quadrupled that this week. What's really powerful about these spaces is the fact that we get to be seen in one another, right? So I get to see other beautiful Black people moving their hair and doing things in different ways, trying out different colors and textures and outfits and being brilliant in that, right? And like exercising that. And so even if I don't see it, I get to take a bit of that reflection and power from folks that I'm with today and potentially give myself a bit more permission to let go of some stuff, right? Like our parents, who I think did the best they could to help us navigate the systems, get the job, like make sure that we're in these spaces and feel confident and comfortable. Like they passed the baton so that our kids, no, they don't have to worry. You show up as you, baby. You show up with all your hair and all your glory and then talk your stuff. And that's going to be the thing that we hope, right, becomes what's more evident than our physical appearance. Because somehow our appearance got associated to being dirty, right? It's unkept. You got locks. They got to be dirty. We're not dirty, right? Like somehow that got associated to that. Somehow it got associated to being unclean, right? To being scary. Droves of Black people. This is threatening. Something's got to be going on. You sure there's not going to be a fight this week at our, like, you sure all y'all know how to act together, right? Like, the notion of even us being in groups together, being in community together, is somehow threatening to others, right? And so the responsibility that we have in here, and even with some of these notions and origins, right, is knowing where they came from, knowing what they meant, what they were used to do to control. And then let's start to reimagine what our go forward plan is, right? Like, what are we going to do next? How do we reshape and rethink that? And so as we think about some of these origins, there's a few slides of these so that you guys have access to the history. You also have access to these too. So please, like, connect with them outside of this space. How do we begin to reimagine these notions that are deeply imprinted on us, deeply in our DNA, when a lot of it has pinned us against one another, right? Like, when we were prepping for this, a lot of what we were talking about was like, yo, I'm not Black, I'm OJ, right? We don't even see ourselves in one another, largely because these things have divided us, right? Like, I went to a PWI, y'all went to an HBCU. Maybe my PWI is better, right? Like, my hair is straight, yours is curly. I'm light skin, you're dark skin, right? Like, we have created these separations amongst ourselves. And so even if not consciously I'm trying to be against you, I know there's not room for all of us, right? I don't see myself in you necessarily as a community, right? Like, not the three of us, because we're the homies. But like, as a community, we're not necessarily seeing ourselves in each other. How do we begin to reimagine that? How do folks use a space like Afrotech to start to reimagine some of these deeply rooted notions?
First, I want to say that our division is not our baggage. That division was given to us.
Ashe.
I think that when we think about how we divide ourselves, of course, with color, that was something that happened due to miscegenation in many cases. Not to say that Black people don't come in all shades, because Black people just come in all shades. But in the context of Black American history, miscegenation is one of the largest reasons that we come in various shades. So that division was given to us. We didn't ask for that. The PWI versus HBCU narrative, again, given to us. At one point in time, we could only go to HBCUs. Once desegregation happened, our schools still underfunded. So you know they was underfunded back then. If you wanted a quality education in 1955 with all the bells and whistles, you had to go to a PWI. It wasn't your choice. It was given to you. Now, as that relates to how do we reimagine this, I think it comes back to us kind of reconnecting with one another and releasing that baggage. I know Issa Rae said something that I thought was really dope about when people start to get on, they start networking up. What you need to do is network across. And when she said it, it clicked for me, because I think it's something so powerful about reaching out to the people that are on your direct level. You ain't got to go try to find Beyonce day two of you being on. It's somebody that went to school with you that is also just as hungry as you are. And they want to be on just like you want to be on. And I think, now, like, for example, my hairstylist, she traveled here for me. She went to TSU with me. Baby trying to get her bag too. So it was important that I gave her this moment, because this moment was huge to me. That's networking across, because most of us come from humble beginnings and we all just trying to make it. So if we reconnect and use spaces and moments like these, that's the easiest way to reimagine the Renaissance and to recreate something that they ultimately tried to destroy, which was our community.
I'm going to go there. I'm going to put a little onus on us, you know, in the sense that we all recognize we're not homogenous, you know. We're not a monolith. You know, we're from different. I think one thing that I got from going to HBCU is like the first time, you know, being from Chicago, you meet someone from, well, can't say Memphis because, you know, we know Chicago is a suburb of Mississippi. But but when you meet someone from Texas or someone from Cali, you know, the East Coast, it's like most of that knowledge I had was consumed through music or what you saw on TV. And so some of these notions, especially as I see them show up in text chains or whatever, you know, some of that is just own stuff. And it may be rooted in some of the systems, but some folks believe in that. And we've seen it. We see it, you know, during this divisive time, Black Twitter or whatever, where you're like, if I'm not going to name names, but representatives of the Black, you know, within the Black community, just do some public in the public sphere, like all of us have different reactions to it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And some of that may be rooted in folks not also understanding what I feel like, understanding some of these things. And when I mean these things, I mean culturally. We just assume everyone thinks the same.
Right.
We assume everyone's going to have those beliefs. When I went to Morehouse, there was such and such the fourth. You know, so I'm meeting brothers that were generational, you know, like, you know, had legacies and different socioeconomic classes and things like that. And so, again, it's like I've taken the time over the years, or I've seen it over the years where, and what I would encourage, you know, as we continue to talk about moving as a community, is not necessarily, yeah, we should be empathetic within our own culture of like the differences that exist.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I would just push a little, just where some of it's the onus on us to understand. But because as soon as you say something that disagreement to the majority, everyone piles in on that person. And it's like, you see within amongst us, we don't agree upon everything. I mean, beauty salons and barbershops, you see that all the time where people are able to talk about it. Those type of same comments they be made in the public, it's like, oh no, you know, we don't agree. You know, yes we do. And we have our own stuff. And so I think some of it does show up just because we just need to push to make sure that we're a little bit more empathetic internally. Or just understanding that where could that exist, or how could it be showing up now for that particular person?
Yep.
Seeing our communities grow and thrive is something we care deeply about here at Black Tech Green Money. State Farm Insurance also cares about the growth of Black communities. They're actively investing in programs and initiatives that help provide financial literacy, give early career advice, and grow Black-owned businesses, thus leading to generational wealth, which helps protect the future of our communities. We want to build a future that we all can be proud of. State Farm understands that representation alone doesn't equate to authenticity. It also requires active sponsorship of programs like the AXO, a year-long program that recognizes and rewards high school students for their academic and cultural achievements, along with funding programs like Project Ready, a national Urban League program committed to educational achievement of Black and brown youth that has awarded over $11 million in scholarship offers to date. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities and can have a long-lasting impact. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Yo, I'm hype. The Black Effect is live. This April 27th, the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival is headed down to Atlanta's very own Pullman Yards. Last year was incredible, and this year will be even more thrilling, especially with Nissan coming back along for the ride. Nissan is returning with some empowering activations to support Black excellence in the STEAM fields. Have a podcast idea you've been eager to share with the culture? Well, Nissan is back with the Pitch Your Podcast Lounge. You'll have the chance to record your podcast idea and share it with the Black Effect Podcast Network team. But that's not all. Nissan is taking the stage to spotlight some of the HBCU scholars from their own Thrill of Possibility Summit, Nissan's action-packed weekend of community building, mentorship, and professional development for HBCU scholars pursuing professions in STEAM. The Black Effect Podcast Festival is the event to be at. You will not want to miss this, because no matter where life takes you, Nissan will dial up the thrill in your adventures. Visit blackeffect.com/podcastfestival for more details.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk. Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
AT&T Connects and Ode to Podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.
This whole idea that we're not one community, right? We look at other cultures and you go to a particular part of town, right? And that's that part of town and that's that part of town. And these families all live together. And all we have right now is the hood, right? And so 2020 has rebirthed this idea of the Black Wall Street area. So maybe we'll consider what it means to all live together and be this like homogenous community. But right now we don't have that. And I'm trying to be like Bridget when I grow up, y'all. So I'm in a
history. Blue hair?
No, blue hair, history. I'm in all the things. These are goals. And I'm in class at a PWI studying history. And one of the things we were talking about was this idea of cultures and communities, right? And we're talking about Native Americans and the tribes and artifacts, right? And like, they want to be able to give things back that they stole and took. And so they're looking at groups that they exploited. They're looking at groups. And when I say they, this is like white, European-centered historians are saying like, ooh, we done messed up. You know, we took stuff. There are some people, Black people, who don't have any really roots or connections to their history. And we stole some things. So we probably should give that back, right? And one of the women in my class was like, yeah, you're right. Like, I think they would want it back. We should give it back to them. And so I'm looking at them like, who are you going to give it to? Who, Barack? Like, there's no tribe leader. Right. There's no one who's like speaking on behalf of Black people.
Where are we going to keep it at?
Right. Like, who's holding it? Right. And so as we consider Afrotech, right, and we consider technology, but also consider this need for figuring out how we re-see ourselves in ourselves, how we collectively access artifacts and documents and just stories of our history. Like, tech is an interesting vehicle for that, right? Like, tech, and right now, Web3, like, we just saw the Alpha Noir competition. Congrats to the winner. Those, all the competitions, the competition was really dope. But congrats to the winner. We were watching you guys in the back, wanting to play the piano and saxophone. So I'm also a consumer. We don't, like, tech might be a space and is a space, as we're learning here, to like really connect this notion and like be a part of that reimagination. What is your perspective on that? Like, how do y'all see tech? Torian, you mentioned music, right? And like, this space in general is curated so well. I know I work for Blavity, but also this is my first Afrotech conference. And it's just dope. Everything from the transition music, like everything just feels Black, right? Like it feels like it was meant for me to be here. Like folks care that I'm showing up. There's a whole experience in here that is really important that they are leveraging tech to be able to do, right? And the platform of technology to do. As we think about reimagination, is there space for technology and leverage for music to like rethink and maybe access game a bit differently?
I mean,
I was just going to say, I think that when speaking to talk about history, I think that there's so much room. As a person that's created a career in museums, museums are slowly but surely going to have to become more technologically advanced because it's very few, I won't say very few, but it's the number of people who go to museums and just gonna stand in front of a panel and read six paragraphs, that's dwindling.
Mm-hmm.
I'm one of those people that's gonna read six paragraphs, but that's my preference. In the world of social media and TikTok, attention spans, they real short. You got to give me a lot of information real fast. And I think if we could find a way to merge the dissemination of historic knowledge with technology, that could transform how museums operate.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about how the National Museum of African American History and Culture came and was such a pivotal moment for Black museums and Black history, if we could find a way to really give them a technology arm so that people who may not be able to travel to DC can still get access to the information, that could shift museums, that could shift the profession of historians.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're seeing it right now. I think it's just, there's gonna be a respect level like that we're giving to the time. I think right now, and I'm you know, dating myself, being a 40-year-old Black man, you know, some of the technology I'm seeing is like, I don't need to use that. But when you recognize, like, or I would have to recognize that is the way. We're talking Web3 all day, you know. This is where we're headed. It's almost like, you know, this is where we're moving. Get on or get left behind.
Right.
And recognize that it's already happening. I mean, if it wasn't happening, we wouldn't have what we call Black Twitter. We wouldn't have, you know, Black TikTok or, you know, in these things, these technologies that have come up, we have, as a culture, have placed our thumbprint on it immediately. You saw what happened with Clubhouse when it came out. Black folks got involved, became lit, and then we made it go away. Like, so
mm-hmm.
it's we find ways to add our culture, you know, we're building, you know, we find ways to add our culture wherever we're at. We're building community at Alchemy. Like, so wherever we're at, we move in a community. It's just recognizing, and this is what I said, the respect, recognizing that it's no longer going to be, you know, for my demographic, no longer going to be always Big Mama Sunday dinner.
Hmm.
It may be your text chain. It may be Friendsgiving, you know, or it's hyper, you know, it's nuanced and it's multifaceted, where it's going to be a little bit of in-person. It's going to be a lot of this, you know, a tech conference. And then it's just going to be the rest of it may be, you know, digitally, when we're building community through there,
yep.
Which is fine. And so I feel like once we have come to recognize that that is where Black community exists now, you know, either whether we're building it on our own platforms in our own spaces or taking over some of theirs, regardless, like, I feel like as long as we use that in a healthy way,
yep.
Like, I feel like the negativity, like, that's, I'm not promoting that. But there are good uses of that, you know, because you could get a lot of information from those influencers or creatives that are on TikTok or these other spaces.
Yep. So we use technology, we connect with folks, we learn new mechanisms, maybe new modalities. My 6-year-old is teaching me all about the things because
Roblox,
still
all that. It's like, what am I doing?
This 40 era, that's not it. I don't even know TikTok. So Instagram is where we're gonna stop. But we use all that, right? We're on the telegrams, we're talking to one another, we're dancing and surf swagging, right? Like, we're wobbling, we're doing all the things that bring us together and build this community. And then we leave Afrotech. How do we make sure that we take that back home with us? Like, what are the ways that we're staying connected? The group chat is definitely one, but I, for one, get very overwhelmed with group chats. They work in the moment, and then at home, I'm like, this.
Mute it. No notifications.
No. Okay, that's a tip.
Like,
but how are we gonna take this home? How are we gonna take this community piece back home?
I think, of course, Instagram. Instagram is one of the most influential apps that I think we have seen created by following your favorite content creators on Instagram who are doing this work. That's how you stay connected. And I'm old school, baby. Come get a business card and shoot me an email.
That's how I
respond.
Got you.
Yeah. I'm an analog girl in a digital world. Like, I'm trying. I'm a TikToker barely. So I think that by connecting in any way that you can, let's have a conversation and take a shot. Like, let's make a genuine connection and take it from there.
Yeah, I would say for this group, continue, I mean, they're here. So I know they're here to network, connect, you know, continue to build on that. I mean, this is something, you know, throughout my career, I've always made sure I did is, I mean, it's power in a follow-up or recognizing that, you know, just because we're now friends on IG or whatever social platform, like it's not as personal. So there's other ways, like that's one way to be connected, but then, you know, that check-in, that follow-up. And so, you know, again, with this group, it's like all the people that you're meeting, that you're networking with, like take that back to wherever you're just going to. Stay in contact with those folks. I met some amazing folks over here, you know, over the last day and a half that I love to continue to build. I mean, we are building a community. This is what we're about. And I think when we get back to the root of what we're talking about, as far as what does the talented 10th look like, I think it's no longer, you know, the 10%. Like if we want to brand it and keep it the talented 10th, mm-hmm. because it sounds cool. But at the end of the day, it's like we move as a people, as a community. And so this is our community. And you just continue to, you know, move up together as a community through the multiple platforms and networks that you have.
Yep. We knew in prepping for this conversation that we would have to address we're talking about history and origins at the biggest Black Tech and Web3 conference. Like we knew that was going to come up. We appreciate y'all for rocking with us, but it was really intentional that we talked about the origins, because if we don't know our stuff, if we don't know the past, then we can't use any of that to propel the innovation, to propel the technology, and do that in a way that's going to serve us collectively, right? We want to make sure, and we said in this beginning that we would leave you guys with something. There's going to be some homework. And just like an invitation, we want you guys to be invited into the possibility of what it means to really be in community with one another. So there's a few takeaways that I just want to make sure that we get y'all through. We want you guys to listen, right? And Torin and Bridget will take you through the other lenses of homework. But our music is such an interesting modality for information, for a lot of this game, for like a lot of this insight from Negro spirituals, right? Especially being in the South, we're in the space of what used to be 46,000 plantations at the peak of enslavement in the US, right? There are the most freedmen towns here in Texas. Like the ground we walk on is sacred. So there's this idea of listening to one another. For one, listen to our music, because there's messages in there that, you know, we rock to it. The beat is hot and all of that's great. But there's real messages that our artists and our community are sharing through their music. And the other piece is just listen to the energy, like listen to spirit. This whole city, especially downtown, is sacred ground. This is sacred space that we've created. Like you've now been imprinted in the convention center. So anybody that comes in here, any conference that's hosted after Afrotech is also getting the imprints of us being here. All right, so there's an invitation in all of this to listen as one. And then you guys want to share what else we should ask the people to do with us?
Yeah, finding someone to collaborate with. If you have an idea, if you have something, if you heard somebody talking, you overheard, it was low-key eavesdropping on somebody conversation, and you feel like you had some genuine input, tap them on the shoulder. Hey, excuse me. I overheard you say, I wasn't trying to be in your business, but I overheard what you were saying, and I would love to just, whatever that may be.
Yep.
Because we cousins, y'all. Help each other out.
Let me get this one.
Yep.
I'm taking
it. No, I was like, ooh. No, so yeah, and visit the historic site of Blackness at Black Austin Tours. I mean, there was an amazing tour I missed, but I saw it on the gram that, again, gives you historical context of, you know, our history here within the city. And so just take advantage of the spaces that we're at. You know, we're here at a new space, meet the people that you're meeting, but also, you know, learn a little bit about the spaces that we're at.
Yep. We've got two playlists, and I'll share that, but this is where I really wanted to go, and then we'll go back to the playlist. Our culture, our music, all of that is just infused in how we do, and so we just curated just our music, our songs that sort of speak to a lot of the things that are coming up, and again, the invitations that you connect with that a bit more intentionally and deeply, and so you can QR code it, use that technology app, you know, to get to the Spotify playlist, but the things that we wanted y'all to leave away with, right? Because this is an exchange of energy and information. Thank y'all for coming to listen, but also this is love, and we sharing this with one another. Know what's yours. We've been given a whole lot of stuff, and we carry a whole lot of stuff that as Bridget and Torian talked about, was never ours to begin with. So let that go. And it's a process of that. So we know that. But make a commitment. Give yourself permission to let go of the stuff that's not yours so that you can reclaim the power of what it means to be in this space and be in a Black body. The second piece, and Bridget just talked about this, like, be audacious and unapologetic with your collaboration. There's a seat at the table. You got an interview. You got a conversation. Bring somebody else with you. There is no interruption. This is not about like that awkward, ooh, can I go into that circle? Can I not? We know how this works. You go in, you say, girl, you look good. Can I just talk to you for a second? Like, there's a way that we know how to connect with one another. And so like, leverage that here. Get rid of those notions of professionalism and networking that make this space that was curated for us unnecessarily intimidating. Don't be intimidated by this. Be empowered by it. Show up, connect, love, hug, you know, respect people's boundaries, but like, be really in community with one another and be audacious about that. And then Legacy's lyric, right? Like, we wrote a paper this year through Blavity.org, but the idea was just to pay homage to the words, the songs, the hymns, the energy of our ancestors that comes through music, right? And we know as Black people, we're holding and we're going to have to pass the baton 7 generations ahead, 7 generations back. We're already doing ancestors' work, right? So the legacies that we're creating are today. And a lot of that is through the stuff that we get to rock with together. So we'll put the QR codes back up. We invite you to engage in our playlist. The music is here. You're going to hear it as we exit the stage. But just another space to invite you into. And thank you. Thank you both for sharing this space with me. Thank you for like having the tough conversation, and hope y'all just go out and love on each other. Be in community. Thank you so much.
Black Tech Green Money is a production of Blavity Afrotech on the Black Effect Podcast Network and iHeartMedia, and it's produced by Morgan DeBon and me, Will Lucas, with additional production support by Sarah Ergen and Rose McLucas. Special thank you to Micah Davis and Vanessa Serrano. Learn more about my guests and other tech disruptors and innovators at Afrotech.com. Enjoying Black Tech Green Money? Leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes. Go get your money. Peace and love.
State Farm Insurance knows that understanding and investing in our cultural identity is paramount in protecting our future. We know what it's like to go from nothing to something, to wish that we had better financial literacy when we were younger. Luckily, State Farm is here to help with funding programs like Project Ready, which is committed to education achievement and has already awarded over $11 million in scholarship offers to Black and Brown youth since 2021. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
What's good, everybody? It's our favorite time of the year here at the Black Effect. We're headed down to Atlanta for the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival, and we're not going alone. Nissan is back as our partner, and they're continuing their Pitch Your Podcast Lounge at the festival, where you'll have the opportunity to pitch your podcast idea live and share it with the Black Effect team. So get those podcast ideas ready. And remember, you can count on Nissan to dial up the thrill in your adventures, no matter where life takes you. Visit blackeffect.com/podcastfestival for more details.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us, wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk? Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar 20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.
AT&T Connects and Ode to Podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.